I want to give you 30 plus ways to promote your book. So I'm going to go through these relatively quickly. I want to leave plenty of time at the end for Q&A if you have specific questions about platform strategies, other things that you might want to use for this. To give you just a quick about me, I am an author. I'm working on my third book right now. I work primarily with the same publisher. I do what my editor calls professional books. So these are books that are mostly like faculty development books. I'm also the associate editor for a journal. I put out edited collections. I'm the editor of a series with my publisher. I do podcasting. I have a weekly essay. I do all of this on the side of my full-time job. So what I want to make clear is that all the things I'm going to talk about today, I've done 90% of them myself. They are totally doable. I think this is the biggest question I get, is when do you sleep? How do you do all these things? It's totally possible if you build in the right strategies. So I'm going to break this up into three different areas. One is before the book comes out. The second is when you have the book available for pre-sale, and then after the book is officially out, what can you do? So the first couple things I want to talk about is blogging. You can blog about the topics related to your book, and you can also blog about the process of working on your book, which doesn't necessarily have to be about the topic itself. So you can see my current book is on managing academic identity online. How do you align your professional values with where and how you want to be on different platforms? So this is a blog post I did on 5 common mistakes I see with professional online presence, which is directly about my topic. It's establishing my credibility. This one over here is about a 30-hour writing challenge I did in April of 2017 to try to make progress on my book. So it's telling people about my process. So either one of those things, sharing out about your process or about your topic, can connect people to your book before it's even out. I have also created a podcast called The Anatomy of a Book, where I talk about the process of writing my book. I don't have a cover design for the book that I can share. The book is not available yet for pre-sale, but I want to start building buzz about it. So I've created a podcast, and people can check in weekly and hear about the status of how things are going on with the book. I released this in April. I started pre-recording it last August. So I'm not doing it in real time. I was able to pre-record a lot of the audio for it, and that made it a lot more time manageable for me. I also produce 2 other weekly podcasts. So this is an area where I feel very comfortable. You want to think about the medium that was really going to work for you in terms of your promotion. You can build a website for your book. All of the books that I have, I've built websites for. This is a great place to start putting content before the book is even out. You might be able to share things like a table of contents. I share my podcast on this site. Once I have the cover, if I have a galley, I create a book trailer, which I'll talk about in a minute. There's all different kinds of things you can start collecting to create a home base for your site. Your publisher might give you a website or an author page, but it might not be enough. My publisher's page is not very aesthetically pleasing. I wanted a lot more control over the look and feel of my site, so I created one myself. This is the one for my first book, this is the one for my second book, and this is the one currently for my third book. You can post on social media. Now, this is a screenshot of the website for my third book that I'm working on right now, and my post says, I'm lost when I'm not working on a new book. Check out the latest updates on my current project here. Link to the book's website. Book is not even out yet, but I'm telling people it's coming. I'm working on it as we speak. This is another example of a social media post that I created for my book. I use a platform called Canva, C-A-N-V-A. And this platform allows you to create social media art. Notice here, all I needed was the cover for my book and the text of one of the blurbs that someone wrote for my book. Typically, you have these things before the book comes out, so you can start to use these kinds of materials to build buzz and create credibility for your work. This is another example of one that I did for an edited collection. I created a quotable kind of social media art for every single chapter in that edited collection. Some of them were written by me, some of them written by others. Notice that this is very similar in style, but it looks different because of the cover and the colors that I'm choosing. But it's pretty easy to recreate a template for something like this. Now this gets shared out on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, various other social media platforms. You can also share your progress via video. Last December, I did a 10-day writing retreat, and I posted twice daily video updates of what I was doing on my writing retreat. In April 2017, I did a 30-day writing challenge. This is from that 30-day writing challenge. I posted daily updates of what I did that day. They were usually less than 2 minutes. It kept me accountable. It allowed people to check into this if I wanted to, or if they wanted to. This is on my YouTube channel. So I created a YouTube channel, and I shared it out there. I also shared it out on the book's website in various posts and also on social media. I did this using QuickTime Player on my computer, so very low, you know, in terms of what kinds of equipment you might need. And this is just me sitting in my home office. You can also present your work in progress at conferences, depending on the kind of book you're talking about. If this is a truly kind of academic book where you're presenting a new argument, obviously that makes a lot of sense. And also you can host a webinar about your topic just to get people kind of engaged in the ideas of what you're talking about. You don't have to have a finished book in order to start kind of hosting those kinds of events. The webinar platform that I use, I'll talk about it a little more in a minute, is called Crowdcast. There are several different ones. Your institution probably has different options for you as well. I fund one on the side because I consider this part of my side business, so I use Crowdcast for that. I currently pay $29 a month. All right, so during presale, this is when you have a discount code and you have a little more information about the book. Hopefully you have the book's cover image and those kinds of things that you can be using. But this is all about building momentum and trying to get people to buy the presale copy. The presale copy is really what helps your publisher to see the kind of interest and buzz that might be going on about the book. So, the first thing I would recommend is create a presale giveaway. There are lots of different things that you can give away when people buy your book for presale. What I did for my book that most recently came out is I gave away a free 30-minute consultation with me, either by Skype or by phone. I email people out monthly that did the presale, and I offer those consultations for a full year after the book came out. So from November to November, I'm available for this free 30-minute consult if you pre-ordered the book. What's nice about that is this is a book that is primarily for faculty development. I had consults with faculty developers. They then bulk ordered my book to do workshops. So those consults and things really pay off in terms of building a relationship with people. It's also totally possible people that I did that with this time are going to buy my next book as well. So it's really about building relationships with your audience. You can offer a discounted speaking fee for people who do a pre-sale copy of your book. Early access to the book's website, early access to bonus resources for the book, a free sample chapter, access to a special virtual event. There's all kinds of things that you can do to do kind of a pre-sale giveaway that you would do with this group. Now, what I always recommend with this is you need to have a relationship with your publisher where they will give you the email addresses of the people who pre-sale order your book. You have to have a way to contact them. If they buy your book via Amazon, you have no way of knowing they did that. So you have to tell them to order it via your publisher, and you have to get their contact information from your publisher. I will send you out a copy of these slides after the presentation, so don't worry about it. Feel free to take pictures, but if you want, you'll get a copy. Yeah, so you'll have a copy. Release a book trailer. Book trailers are relatively easy to create. I used still images for mine, and I created it on iMovie. It took me, and this was the first time I'd ever done it, maybe 3 to 4 hours, because I didn't really know what I was doing. It's about 2 minutes long, a little under 3 minutes, and I basically just talk about some of the features of the book, tell people that it's now available, and this is something you can see on my book's website. It's on my YouTube channel, and it's gotten up hundreds of views at this point, so it's just something that kind of multimedia you can create around your book. You can share a presale discount code. So if you have a presale discount code from your publisher, start telling people about it. Put it out on Twitter, social media, Facebook. When I went around speaking, I let people know that there was this discount code. I have a discount code for presale. I get another discount code for the first like 6 months that the book is out. I also do a lot of discount codes when I'm speaking and things like that. I work with my publisher directly to make sure that I can do that. So this is just one example of a tweet that I sent out, bonus content and a 20% discount when ordered through Stylist Pub. Use the code, can't get better than that. So just reminding people that they can get a discount at this point for buying the book. Email your friends and colleagues. I sent out a personalized email. I sat down and I wrote a list of about 200 people that I thought would be interested in knowing that this book is out there. They might not ever use the book themselves, but they want to support me. They want to support my work. They need to know that I have a book that's out that they can tell other people about. So I wrote this email to my friends and colleagues. I used MailChimp, which has a free version at the base, but you can also pay for things like automation. And I had a discount code, so some of this email reads, as you may know, pre-orders are a really important metric for publishers, so I give them a reason of why I'm asking them to do the pre-sale. If you happen to have an extra $24 burning a hole in your pocket, please consider supporting my book by purchasing a pre-order copy for yourself, a higher education friend or colleague, your local public or academic library. I'm trying to seed the different ideas of why people might want to buy my book and get it out into the world. MailChimp. MailChimp, as in monkey. You can also start to release bonus materials. So before my book was even published, it's a workbook style. I knew that people were going to want to have handouts for it to use it in workshops and other things. They weren't going to want to write in the book if they were going to use it over and over again. So I created PDF handouts of everything in the book that people might want to fill in, and I put it on the book's website. This gave people a preview of the kinds of things that were in the book. They let faculty developers see the kinds of ways they might use it for workshops. And also it just creates nice relationships with people because you're giving things away for free. As I went, I created more PDFs of things that I just thought would be helpful for people. At the end of every chapter of my book, there's questions for faculty, questions for administrators. I compiled all of those into one document, put it in as a handout. So there's lots of ways that you can add to this over time as well. And I broke it out by chapter so that people could take a look. Obviously, you will have a book flyer from your publisher. Typically, I did not create this myself. This was something that the publisher gave to me, but I took it everywhere with me. I asked them to print me color copies and send them to me, or I had them printed in color myself. And then whenever I was traveling, I had copies with me that I could hand out. You might want to create a business card for your book. So you'll see a business card that I handed out that's for me, but there's also one for my podcast. It has a nice image on it. You might want to also create one for your book. So at the bottom of my personal business card, you'll see that I'm the author of this book, and I give a direct link to the book's website. So this is different than the flyer, which is kind of big and bulky. You just have a card that you can hand out specifically about your book, and people can find out exactly where they can find more information. You will want to update all of your online profiles. If you are on social media or any other kind of platform, you'll want to create a Twitter banner, a Facebook banner, update your actual bio information to let people know that they can go somewhere to find out more about your book. Obviously, there's other information you're going to include as well, but these are just some examples of the banners that I put up when the book became available. There's a shot of the book saying that it's available, and then it's very clear in my bio where you can find out more information. All of these banners were created in Canva. They have specific templates and sizing guidelines for every single platform, so it's super easy. Canva, C-A-N-V-A. It's a kind of social media art creation platform, but you can also create slide decks there. This slide deck was created in Canva. All right, so you can also release a table of contents. You can share a sample chapter, and you can notify listservs that the book is now available for pre-sale. If you have specific listservs that are disciplinary or otherwise, that would be really useful for them to know. All right, after the release, are you exhausted yet? Now the book is here. It's actually there. People can hold it in their little fingers. What are some of the things that you can do to maintain interest in the book? Get headshots with your book. Put them on the book's website. Let people see that you are an author. You have a real book. You're holding it. You are credible. This is the headshot. This is how it looks on my book's website. So I've just inserted it in my About the Author part. You can see me with the book. Host a virtual book tour. Okay, so this is very fun. This is a TAA webinar that Janet did. Janet, you're in the room somewhere, right over here, on hosting a virtual book tour. This is what gave me the idea. Thank you, Janet. Virtual book tours can involve things like webinars, blog posting, other kinds of things, in a concentrated period of time where you're really trying to get a lot of information about the book out at once. It could also involve other people reviewing your book on different platforms. I had decided to do primarily webinars. So I put out a call, told people I was taking these 3 days to do the webinars. I had 10 schools sign up to do the different webinars with me. I offered 3 different topics. They got to pick the topic of their choice. I presented the content information for them. And then I was able to have a list of those people that I could then contact again, let them know more information about the book. That ended up in multiple bulk purchasing orders of my book because people had some idea of the content. They were able to trust me. I was giving them really good information. And I ended each of the sessions with a very quick commercial about what was in the book and what they could expect from it. I did an hour. It was like a 45-minute presentation, 15-minute Q&A, and I did them basically back-to-back over a period of 3 days. What platform did you use? Crowdcast. There's several different ones, but Crowdcast is the one that I chose. It has a nice feature under the video where people can ask questions and the questions can be voted up. And then you can link the answer to the question to a timestamp in the video, which is part of why I chose it, because I knew there'd be lots of Q&A. And you can actually see some examples of this on my book's website. If you go to bcdworkbook.com, I have video recordings where you can see the internal, like what Crowdcast looks like, because that's where the webinars were hosted. It is on the bottom of the card you have. It is called BCD for Blended Course Design Workbook.com, bcdworkbook.com. You can find all this linked from my professional site at katielinder.work as well. You can also host one-off webinars. I knew that one of the audiences, the key audiences for my book, were faculty developers. I wanted them to bulk purchase the book and offer workshops and summer institutes and invite me to come speak to them and all these other things. So I hosted a series of free workshops just for faculty developers. I let them know via their listserv, and they signed up and came and learned more about the book. Now, this was me really talking about the features of the book. I talked about how the book had been developed based on a faculty development program. I gave them free resources, slide decks, all kinds of other things that they could use in their work. I told them about the handouts, you know, all these kinds of things. But it was really targeted to this specific audience. You can also see this currently on my website. This is Crowdcast. This is the platform, same platform. Okay, the other things you can do. Email everybody that you cited in the book to say thank you so much for your contribution to my work. Wanted to let you know that the book is now available. Share on social when you speak about the book, and I'll give you an example of this in just a moment. Send books to social media influencers in your network. If there are people who are heavy on social media, send them a free copy and ask them to tweet out when they get a copy of the book so you can start like letting other people see that the book is out there and they'll start sharing it on their platforms as well. This is an example of something I posted 2 days ago on Instagram and various other social media platforms because I went and spoke. And this was the biggest crowd I've ever had where they actually had the book in the room with them. They'd bought like 80 copies of the book, so I had them hold up the book. So you can see a whole crowd of people holding up my book. How fun is it that I went to this thing and I had these books and look at all these speaking engagements that I do, and don't you want me to come speak on your campus too? So you can put this out on social media as well. But you want to think about it in advance. I knew that I wanted to get this shot while I was there. So I was trying to think about when's the best time to ask. You also want to continue releasing extras. Something that I started to do after my book was out was I created some audio extras talking about how the book came to be, all the different kinds of things, the origins of it, the special features of it, what are some things that I think people don't understand about what students assume about blended, you know, all these different kinds of things, and I just put some files out there for people to engage with. This gives you an opportunity and kind of an excuse to continue letting people know, hey, there's this new thing, it's free, you want to check it out. By the way, my book is also on sale. I also released a slide deck on what is blended teaching and learning so that people could use it on their campuses. So I'm giving away presentation materials so that you can learn more about what this might look like on your campus. You can also launch a snail mail campaign. People might think that this is over with. I do not think it is. If you have a small group of people, you can collect their addresses. These are freely available online. Figure out who your audience is, compile a database, write a letter, and mail the letter with a flyer and tell them to call you or Skype you, that you're willing to talk with them if they want to learn more about the book. You would love to answer their questions. This is part of a letter that I wrote, and I did this exact same thing. I sent it out to 100 people. I just did a small campaign, went online. None of the, I would say 80% of these people were not people that I knew. They might have known of me because I'm in the field and they might have heard of me, but I did not know them. So this was a cold letter. The other nice thing about this is you have the database. You can ask your publisher, did any people in my database buy the book? And you can see a direct return on investment from this. So it is something that you can measure to see if it worked. You also want to go where your readers are. You should create an author page on Goodreads and Amazon so that when people search for you in your book, there's material there. They can see a bio of you, they can see a headshot, they can see other books that you've written. So you might want to consider creating these different things if you don't have them already. You can create a syllabus around your book. This is especially true for textbooks. You can create sample assignments. You can do all kinds of things. Provide supplemental readings, outline the different kinds of assessments you might do, create a course schedule, give this away for free. Tell people that this could be a great start for their syllabus of using your book. You can share this out on the book's website via personalized emails, social media. You can link to it when you directly contact people on places like LinkedIn. There's all different kinds of ways that you can put this out there. Now, one of the things that these kinds of free giveaways show is that you believe in your book. You believe in it so much, you're willing to give away things for free. You really want people to engage with it and to buy it and to engage with you. When you speak somewhere, ask your hosts if they're not going to buy the book for the whole speaking engagement, buy it for a raffle item. Ask them if they'll purchase 5 copies to raffle off to the people who are there. So it doesn't always have to be bulk purchases. You can ask people in kind of ones and twos to buy copies of your book. You can also write an op-ed related to your book's topic. This is something you'd probably want to plan ahead of time, and it works really well if you have more of an academic book, again, that's based around some kind of argument. I wanted to let you know, in the fall, I have 2 TAA webinars coming up that's related to stuff around this. One is on designing a web presence for your book. It's a 2-part series that we're going to be offering in the fall, so you want to keep an eye out for that. If you follow me on social media, you will see me posting about this already. I'm already pushing out information about it using this social media art that I created in Canva. I'm also doing a 2nd session on promoting your scholarship via podcasting, because I do a lot of podcasting. So I want to let people know how to get started with it if it might be something that's of interest to you. This is also being offered through TAA. Okay, I wanted to get through that fast so we can move on to questions. I also want to distribute, because I talked about a lot of stuff today, and we are going to, there's lots of links and different resources and things that you might want to have access to. So I've got a sign-up sheet here, and I will email you information from this session so you can see different links and things. The other thing that this will sign you up for, especially if you want to see examples of what I'm doing around this, is my monthly newsletter. If you don't want to sign up for my monthly newsletter, get the first one and just unsubscribe. You'll still get the email from me with all the resources. But this is a good way for you to see the podcasting stuff I'm doing, the blogging that I'm doing. I have a book coming out next year on managing your academic identity online that, if you're interested in these topics, might be of use to you. And I also have a course on academic book promotion that I'm creating that should be released this fall. So if you want to know about any of those things, the monthly email is the best way to kind of learn about those new projects. So I'm going to pause there and see what questions you might have about strategy, platform, resources. Yes. Oh, we got mics. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, just one quick question. I love all the tips, but is there any type of monthly calendar or schedule that you've created for yourself so you can keep track of what you're doing on a monthly, a weekly, or monthly basis?
This is a great question.
Like a promotional scheduling or anything like that?
Yeah, this is a great question. So there's 2 kind of primary ways I do this. One is I have invested in a social media management platform called Edgar. Another common one you may have heard of is Hootsuite. The difference would, it's called Edgar, like the name. This is all the stuff I will email out to you, I promise. I will give you links to all of these things just so you're not having to scramble. But the other one that's common is called Hootsuite, H-O-O-T-S-U-I-T-E. The Edgar platform, what is different about Edgar than Hootsuite is it allows you to have recyclable content that you put into libraries and queues, and then once the library cycles through, it starts over again. So if you have evergreen content, for me that's podcast episodes, blog posts, other things that I want people to see over and over again, I put them into Edgar, they cycle through. There's lots of different buckets of libraries you can create. I have some specifically for book promotion. I can schedule them out on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and they can go out at different times. So that is one way that I'm scheduling it. The second way that I'm doing is incredibly complicated. It's super sophisticated. I have taken a wall calendar. I have ripped it apart. If you're interested in the one I purchased, it was Austin Kleon's wall calendar, which is kind of about, he has a book called Steal Your Art, Steal from Artists, something like that. It's about creativity and productivity. I can send you the link for that as well. But I took it apart, and that's primarily where I schedule out things like the podcasts that are going out each week, because I release 4 different podcast episodes every week. So because of that, I need to know kind of what the scheduling calendar is for that so I'm not overlapping topics and things. And then I do a weekly essay newsletter as well that goes out every week via email and gets posted to a group blogging platform called Medium. And so those primarily get scheduled on that desk kind of calendar, and it's literally me writing it in. Nothing more sophisticated than that. The Edgar platform, if you are interested in it, is a little more pricey. There are, like Hootsuite has a free version. Edgar does not have a free version. It starts at, I think, $500 to $600 a year. But for me, it has been completely worth it. It saves me so much time. Yes?
So my question is, how much sales have increased because of this? And did you find that one mechanism is better, like more bang for the money than like a combined, you know, 32 of these?
Absolutely.
As one. And then second is, did you learn all this yourself, or did
yes.
you hire a marketing consultant to do all of this?
I have learned all this myself. This is part of why I'm writing a book on managing your academic identity online, because I've experimented with a lot of things, and I went looking for help, and I did not find it. There are little blog posts here and there everywhere, and it's not useful. They are not collected into one place. It takes a lot of time. So the book that I'm writing is really about this. And that handout that you have where it's like where all the people can be online, that's coming from the book. That's one of the features of the book, is really talking about the different platforms. To answer your first question, this is what's tough, because as we know from marketing, people usually have to see something 3 or 4 times before they are like, oh yeah, I'm going to pull the trigger and buy that thing. So my strategy is, let me get this out to you in as many possible ways and show you all the different features, and hopefully you will run into this thing and you will start seeing other people with this thing. Other people are going to be posting pictures of this thing. You're going to start to really see it everywhere, and you're going to feel like, oh, I have to buy that book. I had a mentoring session with someone yesterday who might be in this room who said, what's your name again? Did you do something on Blended? I bought your book. It's on my Kindle. Like, she literally bought my book like last week. I mean, it was very strange and that's not why I'm here, is really. I mean, obviously I'm talking about the book now, but I'm talking about academic book promotion. So I think that it's hard to say. Now, do you have to do absolutely all 32 of these things? No. I was in a period of experimentation, really trying. I mean, I created a podcast around my book. That's an experiment to really see, like, is that a way to build buzz and help people to be kind of interested in it? So I think you have to think about, this is what I've told all my mentoring people, 2 things. What is your goal? Are you trying to connect with people, network with people? Are you just trying to sell your book? You know, like, what are you trying to do? And then the second question is, are you more interested in saving yourself time or saving yourself money? Or, you know, if you're trying to save yourself both, this will not work for you. You have to either invest time, money, or time and money in order to do the marketing. So if you're willing to invest time, there's a lot that you can do, especially with tools like Canva. You can use different free versions of tools and get a lot of things done. If you're willing to invest money, you can do things like Edgar. You can hire someone. You can outsource the creation of some of this stuff. You can hire a consultant. You can hire a virtual assistant who can help you set up something like Edgar, create the content for it. You can do all those things. The thing that I see the most frequently, and this is actually something I do on my side business, is outsourcing website design. If you're not sure, maybe you know how to do it, but you don't want to spend the time, you want someone to create a book website for you, there are lots of people who are available to do that. Okay. Did that get both your questions? Okay. Yes.
Hello. So the question might be, it's not so much about promotion, but about blogging and blog posts or series of blog posts.
Yep.
And how that may or may not translate to a line on your CV.
Yes. Good question. So when I think about blogging, and I actually, for me, I don't really think about it as blogging. I think about it as I'm writing a weekly essay and sharing it out. So I think blogging has kind of a connotation that it's like more personal or whatever. So I regularly produce something about process, creativity, productivity, you know, about my work, and I put that out into the world. For me, that's more about building my brand. It is less about putting a line on my CV. I have put my podcasts on my CV. But it's more like that's a way for me to connect with my audience, for people to find me. It's really furthering my side business. It helps me get coaching clients and things like that. And it also really just helps people to know, like, that's my way of sharing out quote unquote personal information online without sharing what I consider to be truly personal. So I do posts on things like my 30-hour writing challenge. And I hired a personal trainer recently, and I talked about that. You know, like, I talk about those kinds of things that are about my work, my process, my productivity, my failure, you know, all those kinds of things. And it allows people to connect with me without me sharing out pictures of what I ate for breakfast this morning, which I don't really want to do. So I think that's part of it. It goes back to your goals. What are you trying to do? I don't think it necessarily aligns to a line on your CV unless it is directly related to an academic. If you are academic blogging and sharing about your research, that's different. And then you might want to consider doing that. The other quick thing I'll say about blogging is I think it's really hard to drive people to a blog that is on your personal website. I would consider using something like a blogging platform like Medium, where lots of people go to that platform. You can tag the blog posts you're doing with different words, and it's more easily likely that they're going to be found by people who are just coming to that platform for other things. If you try to just drive everybody to your website, that's only going to have so much power. And then that's a constant marketing strategy to try to get people to this one place. So consider that as a possibility.
When you are posting on Twitter and Facebook, are you using your personal account, or are you using what, or do you only post non-personal things on Twitter? How do you balance, you know, your real life friends reading your constant marketing versus thoughts on that?
Good question. So I would say for me, my business is my life. And people know that. It's very clear. I love working. I work on the weekends. People know that this is what I do. I enjoy it. I don't have children. So books are like my children. I spend my time in those areas. So when people follow me on social media, they know what they're going to get. They're going to get productivity tips. They're going to hear about my work. They're going to, I'll share some things. Like the other day, I've been in Rhode Island on a consulting trip. I posted a picture of the bay. You know, and I was like, oh, Rhode Island, you're just like a postcard. But it's reminding people, I'm on a consulting trip. Look at me. I travel. I consult. Would you like to consult with me? Like, there's always a kind of reason behind that, a rationale behind your brand and what you're trying to do. But I think that when it comes to kind of personal and professional, right now I manage half a dozen Twitter accounts. I manage three different Edgar platforms because I do social media for the journal that I work on. An academic journal that I'm an associate editor for, and then also for my day job, we have Edgar accounts and things like that. So I'm managing a personal Twitter, which I consider my business Twitter, like that's about me and my personal business. I manage the social media for my day job. I manage social media for two different podcasts, for the journal that I work on. You know, there's all these different kinds of things. So when you work on multiple platforms, you have to be really clear about what gets posted to what. The biggest distinction I make is because I work for a state institution, everything is separate. I came to this conference on my own dime. Like, it's not, you know, Research in Action, which you have some swag for on your tables, that's for my day job, and I can promote that out, but I would never promote my own personal stuff when I go out to a conference paid for by the state. So those are that's the distinction I make way more than personal versus professional. That said, one thing to keep in mind, when you look at my stuff, it may seem to you like I'm sharing out a lot. I'm sharing about failure, I'm sharing about going on trips and those kinds of things. You will very rarely see me post about my partner. Like, there are certain parts of my life that are just not there. And you probably won't even notice because I just don't ever talk about them. So there's just, you make those decisions about what's personal to you that you just won't post. And that's, people don't know. How do they know the difference? Other questions?
Any other questions?
There's a couple more here, yeah.
Only because there was a gap. Do you recommend a business card site for how to make
I use Vistaprint. Pardon? Vistaprint, super cheap. They also allow you, Vistaprint, what they're known for, which I think is kind of funny and useful at the same time, is when you leave the site to go buy your business card, it'll be like, would you like a tote bag? Would you like a hat? Would you like a mouse pad? Would you like this, that, and the other thing with your brand on it? So you can kind of purchase all these different things on Vistaprint, but I create business cards for lots of things. That's like the easiest way for me to promote something small. I can carry it with me when I travel. It's not like a half-page sheet, you know, that kind of thing. And it's pretty cheap to buy them in bulk. Yes?
Do you have any experience working with lead pages or ClickFunnels for driving kind of the whole flow?
Good question. So right now, no, because I kind of create those kinds of things on my own websites, but I've worked with clients that do that and have had good experience with it. I've also worked with people who've done it and have not had good experience with it. So I think it's about building it into your overall strategy. It's something I'm considering, lead pages in particular is something I'm considering using for like an upcoming product launch that I'm doing. But I think if you have your own, what I've seen lead pages work for especially well is people that don't have their own websites. And they're trying to kind of create a quick and dirty space to send people to get them to sign up for a newsletter, to buy a product, to buy a book. And lead pages is a really relatively easy way to do that. But depending on the way you do it, it may not be something that people can afford. So it's something to look into, for sure. There have been people who've used it and loved it.
Sorry, I have one more question.
Yeah.
You seem so easygoing about all of this, and it seems like this kind of stuff is like never ending. You can just do more and more and more.
Yes.
And it's not even the content, it's promoting the content.
Yes.
So how do you manage that level of, it's never enough?
Yeah.
And still feel fresh and easygoing about it?
Yeah, I'm glad I look fresh and easygoing. That's good. What I would say about that is, first of all, I enjoy it. Like, I enjoy playing around with this stuff. I enjoy building my own websites. I enjoy futzing around on social media. You know, like, I think it's interesting. So part of it is just that. And when I had mentoring sessions, like, throughout the last couple days with people, and they're like, look, tell me what you do and how to do it. I'm not on social media. I don't really want to be, but I know I have to be. Then don't go on there. Like, there are ways to do this. I just presented a lot of different promotional tactics that had nothing to do with social media. Like, you don't have to do that. Is it a marketing tool? Yes. Now, the reason why it never ends is because social media is always changing. The Facebook algorithm is changing. Twitter could go away tomorrow. Instagram is constantly changing. Facebook bought Instagram, which changed some features. Instagram added Instagram Stories, which was competing with Snapchat. It was like a whole thing. So you're constantly having to reassess, is this working? You know, do I feel like I'm getting out there what I want? But the other thing I would say is, once you've built the machine, that takes time. This took me approximately a year, because last summer is when I really started getting ready to launch my second book, which came out last fall. I did all this in about a year's time. Once it's up and running, it's up and running. But does it take work? Sure. I mean, I work every weekend to get stuff out. I posted an episode for my podcast this morning while I was here. I had an email newsletter go out on Friday morning while I was here. It was automated. I'd written it before I left. So, I mean, you do create a schedule and you do kind of get into a rhythm, but you have to do what works for you. I mean, I've been writing a book on this all year long. This is research for my book, too. You know, like, and it just happens to benefit me because it's helping me sell my books. So I think that's the other thing to consider, is you want it to be manageable for you, manageable for your budget, manageable for your time. And this is actually really what I focus on, not to pitch it too much, but this book I'm working on now that comes out next year, it's really about that. What are your professional values? What are you trying to do? What are the best platforms for you to do that? Because it's not the same for everybody. And I don't expect from this presentation for you to go out and do 30 things. It's just to show you the range of what's available. And there's something for everyone. You could just do one of these things. I really pushed a lot of people in my mentoring sessions to use the personal reach on LinkedIn. Connect with people in your area and just send them a personal message and say, hey, my book is out. I think you might like it. Let me know if you want to Skype for 30 minutes. Yes.
Which of these venues have metrics to let you know what's working?
Many of them have some kind of metrics. They won't always tie back exactly to, like, did this person buy my book? But you could see, did they click on the link? How much engagement did it get? Like, how many retweets? How many likes? Like, there's Twitter Analytics has its own page. Facebook is quite a bit more challenging because their algorithm is constantly changing. They're really trying to push people to do Facebook ads. And I see, I'm in a couple Facebook groups around this, and people are always posting questions like, I don't understand what this means in my Facebook ad analytics. Like, they're trying to, so it's not always clear. And I think it's a little bit purposefully so. They're trying to create a little bit of a black box around it. For things like podcasting, you get download rates. You have no idea how many people have actually listened. You just know how many people have it sitting on their device. So things like social media allow me to see, I mean, I have 600 people following one of my podcasts on social media. That gives me a sense of the people who are at least interested. I mean, I'm assuming they wouldn't be following me if they hadn't at least listened to one episode. So you can get a little bit of a sense of those kinds of things. But it's usually ballpark. It's not always precise. For things like the snail mail letter, you might be able to see direct return on investment. But the other thing is, you don't know a year from now. Somebody could buy my book who got the letter, who saw me on social media, who somebody else tweeted out that I visited their campus, and then they were ready to do a program on Blended, and so they bought the book. You just don't know. Like, that, it's such a meandering little pathway that's why I've really taken a little bit of a scattershot approach, because I just don't know how people are going to interact with me or the book.
Well, one way you can measure is by some of the ideas you gave about, say, discount codes or special deals. You know, you can have a code so then you can kind of trace, you know, who responded to that. But I just want to plug that on the on-demand TAA, the virtual book tour one, and also the one I did about ancillary materials that I think complements what she was saying in terms of thinking about the kinds of, I mean, with my books, you know, I was trying to think about, you know, what kinds of materials would help someone to, A, use this book, B, adopt it for teaching. So, you know, those were my goals, but I talk about a range of options in those webinars. So I hope that I love this, and I think, you know, the more we can share the strategies we come up with, mm-hmm. Then we can all learn from each other.
Yeah, I want to echo Janet's stuff is so practical. I mean, like, all the stuff she does for TA is really good, so I would absolutely go on the on-demand and take a look. The other thing, too, is I think you can get really creative. So the one of the podcasts that you've got this that you have a card for, it is now sponsored by my publisher. And so I have a discount code just for that podcast, YGT20. The listeners of that podcast can get a discount. So I check in with my publisher. How many people have bought books using the discount code? 80% of the books they're buying, mine. When they use that discount code, they're buying my book. That's great. Not what we expected, but they're using it to buy my book. So there's other ways that you can kind of think creatively about getting the word out. Do I only talk about that book on that show? No. Not at all. I mention it every once in a while. It's part of my larger brand and message. But they've used that code to buy in. So it is about, I think, like what Janet's saying, getting people to see how they can use your book, the credibility behind your book. What are the kinds of things that people really need to think for you to be credible, for you to be trusted? And if you're building a relationship because you're going to have multiple versions of your book come out, or you're going to have other books coming out in the future, you want people to follow you. You want people to stay engaged because they want to know what your projects are in the future as well.
Just a moment. Yeah. I also want to say we are recording this session, and we'll be posting on the website, and we'll include the links that that Katie's talking about today, and we'll also include the links to Janet's sessions that are similar to this session. So I just wanted you all to know that. So
thank you.
Katie, you mentioned a point running through everything else. That's really, really important. I did podcasting. I think I started back in, like, before iTunes.
Yep.
I started podcasting. I was running, like, 5 of them at one time. I'm not active in it right now, but mm-hmm. you've inspired me to do a series, pre-record it.
Yep.
And release it gradually on my newest book.
Absolutely,
I really like the, for academic authors that don't think they want to get into a lot of social media, what she's talking about with the ancillary materials, the resources to go with your books are invaluable. That's how people adopt your books. And it's really, really important. It makes a big difference if your book has support materials for them to be able to use, to understand the value of your book, and investing gradually over time in developing those and releasing those will have a great impact. Mm-hmm. Thank you for all of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another thing that you mentioned as you ran along was repurposing content.
Yes.
And you were talking about Edgar for doing that.
Yes.
But we can do that in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. You've demonstrated that in many different ways. And it's something that we're not really trained in as academics and maybe authors, because we're used to, you write something, you can only publish it once. You know, there are those liabilities on that. But when you're dealing with some of this content, the social media content and the webinars and all, this is content that you can create and use as pre-release, create and then continue to use it as resources for the book once it comes out. Use it to support your sessions. When you go to workshops, you have it as on-demand content. So think about these as not one-off time investments. But this, you're building a reservoir, a library of material that people will be able to access about your work. And you can use it in your classes as well. Plug it in as on-demand content that your students will use. Mm-hmm. That's a big part of what I did with the podcasts that I developed. Mm-hmm. I used them for years as resources and part of the curriculum in the courses that I was teaching.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know? So that reusable content is something we don't usually think about
it
necessarily
saves a lot
as
of time.
Authors.
Yeah.
But when you think about it with this, it's really important because you're investing time in creating these materials, and you can use it in many different venues. So it's really worth, it has the bang for the buck, bang for your time investment in that.
Yeah, I'm really glad you raised that. And a good example of that is when I did the virtual book tour, I created 3 different possibilities. I made all of those 3 different things out. I kind of scaled them out into 2-hour workshops, and now people bring me to their campuses and hire me to do those workshops on their campuses. So it was a seed for something that got scaled out into something larger. So, I mean, I think that's something else. And when I go to campuses, they make bulk purchases of the book. So it's all connected. I mean, it's all about a strategy of how you're trying to connect you, your work, the book, you know, the things that you're writing about. And it does all tie together. You're kind of the nexus of that. So it is about kind of brand strategy along the way as well.
Yeah, I'd like to say also we have some great presentations by Kathy, so on our website. So I do encourage you to go and look at our presentations on Demand Library, because you can get a lot of in-depth content similar to what Katie is presenting today, and lots of others. So,
all right, other questions? Yes.
Some of us were at a session right before this on self-publishing.
Uh-huh.
Just wanted to get your thoughts on that. And one of the things they mentioned was DOI,
uh-huh.
Using DOIs. Are you using that?
So DOI is, it's a searchable way to find your content. So because my stuff has ISBN, I don't worry too much about that. When I publish peer-reviewed articles and things, it's helpful for it to have a DOI. The other kind of personal thing that you can think about, I don't know if they mentioned ORCID, but ORCID is another way to kind of identify your research specifically to you as an individual, and you can get an ORCID identifier. And then if you go into places like ResearchGate or Impact Story is another place that helps you to track the impact of your research online, you use your ORCID number, and then they use that to find your work and figure out who's citing it and things like that. So ORCID is what I've been more invested in because it ties my work to me versus a DOI number. In terms of self-publishing, I have some self-published books. They were actually built off of a blog that I did when I was a grad student. You can see them on my, I may have already passed by it, my Goodreads author page, wherever that is. Here. I have one on called To Do Dissertation, and then another one on 15-minute tasks for dissertation writers that I did when I was a grad student. I just put them out on Kindle. I'm still getting royalties for them. This has been like 5 years ago. I don't know why anybody's still buying them. It seems like they would be seriously out of date. But they're up there. I mean, that's the route that I took. But for me, I am not a faculty member. I've been a full-time administrator my entire career. For credibility purposes, I need to be with an academic press. For me, that is my choice. And I like working with an editor. I like having things sent out for review. Could I do all those things on my own? Sure. But I think it does make a difference to send things out to a press. And so I've chosen to do that for my own career. I totally understand when people want to self-publish. I think it makes sense in a lot of situations. For academic presses, they cannot offer you a lot in terms of marketing and promotion. So you're doing that anyway, whether you self-publish or you go with a publisher. But yeah, that's a good question. Anything else?
Any other questions?
One back here.
I was wondering about, I have an English college writing skills workbook style book, and it seemed like when it first came out a year and a half ago, I had tons of momentum. Sales reps were really excited. I was meeting with them at conferences, like in Minnesota. I met with the sales reps. They mm-hmm. said, can you talk to some of our faculty? Can you do a little PowerPoint for us? And then my editor at the time, who was very solid, didn't realize he was about to be deposed, was like, oh, we'll take care of all that. You know, you're too busy. And so I kind of got out of the loop. But do you have any thoughts on where the boundaries are when you're working with a really major publisher with that kind of book, in terms of, do I need to get permission for what kinds of publicity, and who should be in the loop with me on that?
Good question. So I work with a relatively small publisher, so I can only speak from that. I don't want to give you wrong information, but your publisher does not own your brand. That's the bottom line. You own your brand. And these products are part of your brand. And if you want to promote them, you should promote them in whatever way you feel supports your brand. So what I always do is I have regular phone calls with the promotions person of my publisher. When I first started working with them, she said 3 out of 4 authors are not promoting their own work. They don't know how. This is why I'm building a course on academic book promotion. I think we are not trained in this. We don't know what we're doing. And I had to go through and learn a lot of things. So let me tell you about all the things so that you don't have to do that. I think that because of that, she's a one-woman show with my publisher. She's trying to promote out multiple books a year, and it's a hard work for her. So I have regular calls with her telling her what's coming up. It's usually quarterly to say, here's what's coming up on my promotion calendar. This is where I'm going to be. Are you going to be there too? Is someone from the publisher going to be at this conference? Will my book be there? Whenever we're in the same place, I do a book signing, and we both promote that out on social media. That's another thing you can do once the book is out, is do book signings, book release parties, those kinds of things. But I think that it's not about permission. I think it is about communication and keeping them in the loop about what you're doing. And if you're using any kind of discount code or things like that, you just want to make sure that the discount code is not retired yet. You know, like, you don't want to be giving people misinformation. But if you can, meet regularly, you know, at least a phone call with those people so that you can talk with them about what you're thinking of doing. My sense is publishers are thrilled when you do this. They do not have the time or resources to do this. If you're willing to engage, they love it. They think it's great. And they'll help retweet you and like your stuff and make sure you're connecting with them on social media if you're on those platforms. But I have often heard from this person, actually. She said, bless you. She said, yeah, I was at a conference and the authors didn't tell me they were going to be there. How are they supposed to know where you're going to be unless you tell them? So you have to just keep up a constant communication with them so that they know what you're doing. I would recommend that.
I have a website. I have a website. I have a Facebook page. I'm conflicted about whether I should post about my several books or whether each book should have its own website.
Great question. Yes. So this is something I actually just went through myself. My first book was priced really highly. It was an academic book. It was based on my dissertation. It was very hard for me to market it. I primarily marketed to academic libraries because I was like, no one can afford this book. It was only out in hardback. So I did not create a website for it. I just linked out to the publisher's website, and I actually didn't even market it that much. It was kind of embarrassing. Like, I felt like it was just really expensive. Well, then it came out in paperback this year. Then I started marketing it like crazy. I created a website for it. And I started telling people, hey, my book's out in paperback. I'm so excited. I love this book. Like, because I want to market it. It was just too expensive. So I think one way to make this decision, it depends on how distinct your books are from each other. My first book is very different from my second book. My background disciplinarily is women and gender studies. Blended course design has nothing to do with that. And this book on managing your academic identity also doesn't really have anything to do with either of those first two things. So I create separate spaces because they probably have separate audiences. I'm the link, but there are probably people who are coming over here to my first book who may not have any need to look at the other two. So I create those separate spaces. The other decision I think you can make, my first book has, I don't create a lot of supplemental content for it. I could, but I'm not speaking on that topic anymore. It's not really part of my brand anymore. It's just something that's part of my history. So I've just created a one-page website. You can just scroll through the whole thing. The menu at the top just links to different parts of the page. Very simple. For the other books, they have multiple page websites. There's podcasts affiliated with it. There's extra resources, handouts, audio extras, you know, all these different kinds of things. So it needs its own space. The other question about your professional website is, and I manage multiple websites for my podcasts and things like that. They're too big for my professional website. It would just clutter my professional website, because my professional website is about telling you about what I'm doing right now, my creative work, but it's also about selling my services as a coach, consultant, speaker, those kinds of things. So the books are connected, but separate. If you really want to know about the, you might want to know about the book and not care about that I do speaking. So you try to think about what your audience wants, and I create the spaces based on that. Who's really going to want this? Now, if you go to my book website, absolutely there's a link to my professional site. Like, you can easily be, you can see the connections between all these things. If you go to my podcast site and the about page, there's absolutely a link to my professional site. But you don't have to go there if you don't want to. So it's really about audience, I think. And also resources. What do you feel like you have the resources to put into it?
What did it take to get them to put out a paperback of that expensive book?
This is a really good question. And I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. They emailed me out of the blue and said, hey, we're putting out a paperback copy of your book. I always heard that it was based on awards, sales, things like that. I can't imagine it sold that well. It's an incredibly niche book on an incredibly niche topic. The topic doesn't go out of style because it's about rampage violence, which is it's in schools, which is on, you know, it's an ongoing thing. Unfortunately, it's not something that has ended. So I can only imagine that they thought it was timely. I have no idea. Because I don't think the sales have been great. My royalties for that book are like, I don't even know that I've gotten royalties for that book. I have no idea. So when you asked about kind of the return on investment with my second book versus my first, huge return on investment, because I have absolutely received royalties for my second book. It's been night and day, because I didn't really market the first one at all. So if that was my baseline, this is very different in terms of like people actually going out, engaging with the book, engaging with me, hiring me, all those kinds of things. Yes?
I just wanted to comment on your question. I learned from a colleague that she had a hardcover book out, and she found out that if a number of institutions around the country send a letter requesting
the paperback.
Paperback, then it would happen.
Call your friends. Ask them all to send a letter. I mean, I really don't know. I'm happy it happened. I mean, it's just, I have no, there's like, that's a mystery to me. I don't know. There's one over here, too.
Thank you. I may have just not been paying attention, but you had a main category at the beginning of things to do before the book comes out.
Yeah.
And then pre-sale. But have you talked about what to do when the book is
yes.
mature
so
and
these things,
out?
Yeah, these things here towards the end, go where the readers are, launch a snail mail campaign, continue releasing extras, share on social media when you're presenting about the book. All these ones were post-book release, the virtual headshot or the virtual book tour, getting your headshots. Yeah. And again, you'll see the slides. And there is a little thing right here that says after release maintaining. So it is listed there. There's one here.
I don't mean to make you repeat yourself,
no,
but could you mention again the blogging platforms?
It's called Medium.
Medium.
Medium, yeah. So it's listed on the handout that I gave at the very bottom. I think there's four listed, Blogger, Tumblr, WordPress, and Medium is one of the ones that's listed on the bottom. And it is a group blogging platform. It's kind of like an online magazine. That's the best way to describe it. So lots of people contribute to it, but it makes you a little more searchable. And people can find you. And the more you post, the easier you are to find. Like they keep emailing me because I get pretty regular people following me on there. I have a little under 300, I think, at this point. So it's not a lot. But I mean, the way I look at it, every time someone downloads one of my podcasts, that's me in their ears, whether they've listened to me before. Like every person who engages with my stuff, I am thankful for. I'm not looking for tens of thousands of people. I'm looking for the one person who wants to bulk buy my book for their faculty or whatever it might be. So on Medium, they'll say things like, you're a suggested writer in productivity. So when people get emailed out from that platform, they probably get emails about my work because I constantly write about things like productivity. And because I tag it that way, it gets pushed out for me by the platform. That makes sense. That wouldn't happen if it was just on my blog. I would have to push it out through my own channels. So it's just a way to kind of let it work on your behalf.
And what's the difference between that and WordPress?
So WordPress is a blogging platform that there's two different ways to do WordPress. You can own your own domain, and you can install WordPress on that domain and host your own blog, basically. So it's your own website. Or there's a free version of WordPress where it's basically the same thing. Like it's the same backend, it's the same content management system, but it has WordPress in the domain name. So it would be like katielinder.wordpress.com.
So we have a WordPress website.
Yes.
Can you link it to Medium?
You can. Okay, this is a great question. You can take your blog posts from a WordPress site, export them, and import them into Medium. So I take all my podcast show notes, and I have imported them into Medium. I retag them, and I make them searchable in Medium, because I don't really care if people come to my podcast website. I just want them to listen to the show. So it doesn't really matter to me. I get the metrics from anywhere they listen from. They don't have to come to my site for me to get that metric. If they want the show notes, they can go to the one on Medium or that. So there is a way to export and then import if you want to share out on that platform as well as your own site. If you do that, I would make sure that each of the posts on Medium has a link back. So like when I post out my weekly newsletter, I always say at the bottom, this was first released to my newsletter. If you want to get it, here's the link to get my newsletter. So I make sure that people have a way to kind of go back to the original place if they want to.
Okay, so we're almost out of time. This will be our last question.
I'm curious to know about the process you engaged in to get your publisher to sponsor your podcast.
Yeah.
I'm interested in getting my publisher to sponsor my website as well.
Okay, good. So what I did was I asked them. That's the most important part. But I would also say my YGT, that you've got this podcast, has a much smaller download rate than like Research in Action because it's been around less time. It's a pretty niche audience. I'm still growing it. So when I went to them, it was certainly not, you're going to have all these downloads. Like that was not my argument. My argument was, I'm one of your authors. I want you to support me in my growth. You know how hard I'm working on promotion. You know how hard I'm going to work on this podcast. And I will give you things in order for you to sponsor me. I will give you a monthly book review. So I review a book every month on the show. If you give me a discount code, you know, like, so we did like a swap. So they did pay me a monetary sponsorship for an annual sponsorship, which wasn't that much. It was really just me playing around with the idea of sponsorship and trying to figure out how to do it. But I do the review. They get mentioned on one of the two episodes that goes out every week. But it was about building my relationship with that publisher, and they are part of my brand. I have maybe six projects going on with them right now between a series I'm editing, edited collections, my own books. I work with two of the three editors there. You know, like, they know me. They know that I'm working on this. And that was a big part of it. They knew me and they trusted me, and they were willing to take a little bit of a risk because they'd never done it before. So I did put together a sponsorship package that I built in Canva. I used Canva to create a sponsorship package to give them some metrics and some ideas. But then I just negotiated it with the promotions person that I work with normally. We have a contract. I did create a contract that we both signed.
Thank you so much, Katie.
Thank you, everybody. Woo!